Well, I am for sure glad that I am back with y'all tonight. God bless me, got me over there, He got me back. He always takes care of His folks. Got to spend some time with some family and talk to some family, so everything went good, and now I am back with my family. So I'm glad to be here. And God does bless, and He continues to bless, and He's good. He ain't like they call good, but He's good. But He has mercy that's abundant. In fact, He is rich in mercy, rich in grace, and His mercy will never run out because He's rich in it. His grace will never run out because He's rich in it. He owns everything. So if somebody owns everything, they don't need nothing. So I have a Father that has everything and is there for the asking. We just need to learn how to ask. So I think we left off where? 23 or 24 in chapter number 32. Now, I didn't get to study much farther than this chapter, but we'll see where we go with it and see what happens. But in 23 it says, He took them and sent them over the brook, talking about His wives, and He sent them out in an order with His children, and so as to protect them in case Esau was a little bit violent or whatever, hopefully in that if some got attacked that the rest would not. And then it says in 24, Jacob was left alone. And yet He's never alone. We're never alone. While He was left alone, meaning all people around Him, all groups of people around Him, He says, and Jacob was left alone, and he wrestled a man with him until the break of day. Now, we understand that this man was the angel of the Lord, or Jesus Christ Himself, and we understand that he wrestled with this feller all night. Now, I did a little wrestling here and there, and it's strenuous to wrestle. You get bowed up against somebody, and they're as strong as you are. You get nerves to twitching and muscles to twitching, and everything gets to hurting. The sweat keeps a popping out. The blood gets to boiling up in you. It's a struggle. Now, when we talk about him wrestling here, it could have meant that he actually was wrestling with this man with his arm around his neck, and him with his arm around his neck, kind of like when David's guys all came out and each one grabbed each man by the beard and each one stabbed each other. But we know he didn't stab this man, but we know he wrestled with him all night. So it says they both had a hold of each other in a strenuous conflict. Strenuous, it says. And he wrestled with him till the break of dawn. So we don't know what time of the night he started, but we know that when he did get started, he stayed there till it started getting daylight. He says, and when he saw that he prevailed not against him, talking about the angel, but not when we understand that he prevailed not against him, we're not talking about the angel was not able, but that the angel caused Jacob to have to struggle at his fullest, to wrestle at his fullest, to put all he had into it, because Jacob's going to ask him after this gets over with to bless him. Jacob's going to ask him to give him something, and the angel is going to make him work for what he gets. He's going to make him strain and struggle for what he gets. He knows what he wants. He knows what he needs. But it says, when he saw that he didn't prevail against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint when he wrestled with him. Now, when he touched him on the hollow of his thigh, in the midst of this fighting, Jacob really don't realize he's out of joint yet, because he's been straining all day long, so he probably didn't even realize when it got out. He's out of joint. He's probably hurting and don't realize it because he's in this strain. But it says the angel, to humble him, the angel to get a hold of him, touched him in the joint of his thigh, probably on the sinew or the inside of the leg there that goes up in that hollow spot in your hip and your thigh bone there. And it says, and he became out of joint as he wrestled with him. During all the twisting and the pulling and the jerking, and he said, let me go. This was the angel speaking. Let me go, for the day breaketh. And he said, I will not let thee go except thou bless me. Now, I can remember a time in my life right after God saved me that some serious things was going on. And I can remember several nights that, I won't say that I wrestled with God, but I'm sitting here praying and praying and go to sleep praying, fall asleep praying, still praying in the morning. And my words to God was, God, whichever direction you want me pointed in the morning, that's the way I'm going. Now you say, God did that for you? Yes, He did. I had two choices to go into. I trusted God. I said, God, whichever way you want me to go, you put that on my, when I wake in the morning, that's the direction you want me to go. You put that on my mindset. Well, the next morning when I woke up, He said, you take this. And first of all, it was, are you sure? But then I remembered, what did I say to God? God already knows what's best for me. God's already going to know what's going to be the right thing for me. I understood that part. So I said, if you've pointed me in this direction, even though in my mindset that's not the best deal, but I'm going to take the deal God told me to take. And I want you to know, when God, I did that, God blessed me. God has given me more than I've ever had. And I could have took the other deal and probably lost everything doing it my way, but instead God put it on my heart, you take this deal. And so I did. But there was a time when I would go to bed at night and I would actually wrestle in prayer with God. I would actually struggle in prayer with God. And I'm sitting here when we talk about, and he struggled all night in prayer, or he struggled all night wrestling with the angel of God. Was he talking to him about his sheep and his children and his wife and what Esau's going to do to him? Lord, I need to be blessed. I need you to take care of my family. You promised me all these promises that are going to come up. You told me you'd never leave me nor forsake me. You told me you'd make my children as the sands of the sea. You told me all this thing. And Esau with 400 people are coming while he's wrestling with this angel. He says, I won't let you go till you bless me. I'm wondering, maybe sometimes when we're praying, maybe we need to get a hold of God and say, God, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. I'm not thinking he's going to change my name to Israel. And he's not going to change your name to Israel like he did here. But what I'm saying is, sometimes we do this, oh Lord, you know what I need, blah, 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 amen, thank you. When maybe we ought to stay hooked up at the throne of grace till we know we've been blessed. And either, whatever God does is going to be a blessing, but till we know that we've got the answer we were looking for. We say, Lord, I know I have put it on your throne. I know I've laid it at your hands. Lord, it's out of my hands now. Whatever you say, God, you got it. I'm going to trust you. I'm going to obey you. I'm going to follow you with it. Jacob said, I won't let you go till you bless me. No, not even till you, except you bless me. So in other words, we're going to be here all to the rest of the day too, except you bless me. I don't plan on letting go. Now we know if Jesus wanted to shook him off, he could have shook him off. But the thing is, he had this mindset, except you're going to bless me, I'm hanging with you. I'm staying with you. And he said, let me go. And he said unto him, what is thy name? And he said, Jacob. And of course, the Lord knows what Jacob means, the supplanter, the trickster, the conniver, the... He says, this is what I was given as my name from the very beginning when I was born. And the angel knew exactly what that meant. You're a conniver. You're a trickster. You're a do things by subtlety and things like that. He says, what is your name? And he says, my name is Jacob. He already knew who he was. He done blessed him when he left Beersheba and was at the little pillar there. In the desert, he says, I'll always be with you. I'm going to increase you. I'm going to take care of you. I know who you are. And he said, and back then he says, I'll give you a tithe of everything I make. He says, my name, he says, is Jacob. And he said, thy name shall be called no more Jacob, no more the trickster, no more the supplanter, no more this, but Israel. For as a prince hast thou power with God and with man, and hast prevailed. Hast prevailed. In other words, you have prayed through. You have wrestled through. You have stayed here at the foot of Jesus. You have stayed here at the foot of the angel, wrestling till you got your blessing. You have been called now Israel, a prince with God. In other words, you have been face to face with God in prayer, in locked up, and God has blessed you, and now He has called you Israel. And it says, and Israel means that you are now a prince and has power with God, and not only with God, but also with men, and has prevailed. In other words, not that he came through on his own, but God, by not letting him let go of him, by God making him hang on, by God, you have prevailed because I have brought you through this thing. I have heard your prayers. I have sat there with you. I have wrestled with you. You have wrestled with me. And now I have blessed you. He had already blessed him 20 years ago when he was in the desert. He said, I'm going to multiply you. I'm going to make you children as the sands of the sea. I'm going to give you all the crops. I'm going to make you a rich guy over there. And he says, now you have prevailed. You are a prince with God. You are have good rapport with mankind. And he says, and Jacob asked him and said, tell me, I pray. Tell me, I pray. What's thy name? What's your name? And he said, wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name? In other words, who are you? I've been wrestling with you all night. We've been locked up here all night, and I'm asking you to bless me, but who are you? And here's the funny thing. He says, I'm God Almighty. Nope. He says, what's it tell you? Wherefore is it that thou askest my name? And he blessed him there. He said, why are you asking me my name? You ought to know exactly who you've been wrestling with. You ought to have done figured out. You've been wrestling with God because you've been in this great stress. You're getting everything that you'd asked for. You're getting everything I promised you. There's no doubt in your mind should be that you have to say, who are you? Now, when Moses said, who are you? He says, I am that I am. When all the rest of them says, I am the Lord thy God, I am the Lord God Almighty, I am this, he says, you don't even have to ask me, you already know who I am. You've already got it figured out who I am, and he blessed it. Who else but God could bless you? Who else but God could fix you up? Who else but God has the power to save you, first from his Laban, coming with his anger and his crowd. He had a pretty good pile of guys with him. They crossed over the river after him. Then he got rid of Laban, and now he's facing Esau coming with 400 men, and he's got his people all spread out trying to make gifts and stuff like that to appease him a little bit. And he says, who else but God could bless you? And he says, he didn't say, I'm almost going to bless you. I'm thinking about blessing you. He said, and he blessed him there where he was at. He blessed him with blessings. He was back here, and we're going to see that he's back at Bethel. He's back around Bethel. He says, and he's at the house of God. And Maharan, we read that word a while ago, it means the host of God. And it says while he was wrestling here, he taught him. And he gave him the power and his presence. He said, Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen God face to face. Now, I know that we talk about wicked men, sinful men. If they saw God, it would knock them dead on the ground. And we know Jacob was a sinner. But he was also of the lineage of the family of Israel. He was the beginning of Israel. And so, when it says he saw God face to face, he actually was there wrestling with this angel, this God. And he was there in that arm lock with him. And he was there face to face with him. And I'm sitting there, wouldn't that be something? To just be able to be eyeball to eyeball with God. To be face to face with God. To struggle and ask God for blessings and things like that. And see that when you ask for them, you're going to get them. He says, and Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for I have seen the face of God. And I have seen God face to face. He didn't just see God's face, but he says, I have seen him face to face. Kind of like looking in a mirror at him, eyeball to eyeball, nose to nose. I have had him in a lock of my arm, and he's had me in a lock in his arm, and we were there all night together. And my life is preserved. When you see God face to face, guess what happens to us? When we got saved, when we saw God as who he needs to see him as, we get our lives preserved. He says, I saw God face to face and my life is preserved. Not just his life, but all 12 children, because the 13th hadn't been born yet, all 12 children, plus his four wives, plus his camels, plus his donkeys, plus his sheep, plus his cows. Doesn't say he lost one single animal or one single person in all of this. And Esau come, and of course he gives the gifts to Esau and does that. But the thing is, as far as losing them in death or they getting killed off or anybody dying from this thing, he lost not one soul. His life was preserved. Every bit of his whole family was taken care of. He says, my life is preserved. And as he passed over Peniel, the sun rose upon him and he halted on his thigh. All of a sudden he realizes, whoo, I'm hurt. I've been wrestling and straining and struggling. I felt something, but I wasn't sure. But now I'm up on my feet. I can move around. And I ain't wrestling anymore. And now I got this kind of limp going on because my hip's out of joint, my thigh bone's out of joint. He says, and he crossed over and he halted on his thigh. Now, it doesn't say here that he halted forever. Now, some people kind of think that, and it might be possible that he did, because it does say that some places that he prayed leaning on his staff. Of course, that could have been from old age, but he could possibly have stayed crippled the rest of his life, or he might have actually got healed from this later on a little bit as he got well from the wrestling. But it does say that the Israelites will not eat of that sinew because it shrank up and it drew his hip out of joint. It says, and therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew that shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh, and the sinew shrank. In other words, that's a pretty superstitious bunch too sometime, huh? I mean, think about it. Jacob got touched in his thigh, so we're not going to eat no more around that part of that ham bone or that leg bone or whatever. Well, it wouldn't be a ham bone because they wouldn't eat no pork, but they weren't going to eat no more around that shank that shrank up. So every time they dressed out a sheep or a cow or whatever, that little part got cut out, thrown away. Which is part of that big old piece of gristle I hate anyways. That always gets stuck up in your teeth or someplace. It says here, but they will no longer eat that. Says he wrestled with him all night and God blessed him and God changed his name and God turned. That's where Israel come from. We started with Abraham, God blessings. And he talks about the seed in Isaac. And then we get Isaac gets blessings and it goes down to Jacob. And now Jacob has 12 children. Well, one of the sons ain't born yet. And becomes the nation of Israel. And that's where the bloodline and heritage for Jesus Christ just keeps coming and coming and coming until he makes a whole nation out of these 13 kids. I don't know what happened to Dinah at the end. I can't tell, but I know that he had to have all 12 patriarch sons to make the nation of Israel up, and even some of them go sideways and crazy. But it says here, and Jacob lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. That would have scared me to death. I'm sitting here, 400 men. Now, what's he got on his mind? I mean, the last time I heard anything about him, he wanted me dead. Last time I heard anything about him, if I hung around the house here, once Dad died, I was going to die. Well, Dad ain't dead yet. Mama may be, but Dad's not dead yet. So he's sitting here. This still could take place. He could be coming out here. He might be enough power to overcome Dad. Now, he might just do it anyways. But he says, and he saw Esau coming with 400 men, and he divided the children unto Leah and unto Rachel. And we say, well, and didn't he do that in the last chapter? Sort of, kind of, but now he's going back over here. And he divided the children with Leah and with Rachel and with the two handmaids. So now we've got each group with each one of their children, each amount with each one. And he put the handmaids and their children foremost. Well, girls, y'all been nice, but if something bad happens, you're the first ones out. I mean, I didn't actually want y'all. I just got y'all by a deal. So there you go. You're the first ones out. And then he put Leah and her children He married her first, but he was really married, wanted Rachel. He loved Rachel. So he says, you know, we've talked about he hated Leah. Maybe not in the hatred to kill her or anything, but in the hatred enough, you'll go before she goes. Yeah, I'm here. So you're going to be third in line here, and then we'll put Rachel and Joseph in line. So we see here, he still was picking favorites. Can you imagine how that family at dinner time or around the Thanksgiving table was? Well, you always get this, you always get that, and she treats you like this, and he treats you like that. That had to be one squabbling bunch of young'uns. And we know it was, because when it comes time for Joseph to go out to the field to see them boys, he said, there comes that troublemaker. They couldn't even be nice to him. Couldn't even force themselves to be nice to him. They just was mean to him all the time. It says here, anyways, and he put Rachel and Joseph in the hindermost, and he passed over before them. In other words, he stepped up, got ahead of them, and he passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother. So I don't know how close he was when he started, but he bowed down, he got up, he went a little bit, he bowed down, he bowed himself down 7 times, or else he got in one place and he bowed down 7 times in a row. But he made sure that his brothers understood that I'm showing you respect. I'm showing you that I understand that you're important. He tried to make him feel like, hey, I've sent you gifts. I've sent you stuff to show that I respect you. I've sent you stuff to show that I know you're my brother. I'm not trying to be angry with you. I'm not trying to come over here and take nothing away from you. I got all of my stuff. You got your stuff. There's no need in us having to be in a war or a fight with each other. So he bowed himself down 7 times until he came to his brother. And Esau ran to meet him. This had to just near about knock his socks off. He ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and he kissed him and they wept. This whole night he's worried about Esau's going to kill me. This whole night he's sitting there just worrying himself to death. Can you see what wrestling with God can do? He might have had his own mindset when he started out. Well, I ain't sure about all this. But as he's coming, as he sees the gifts, as he sees the different things of sheep, God is working on Esau's heart. God has fixed Esau up. That's my brother. He ran to meet him. He didn't just sort of ease him. Okay, how you doing? No, he ran to meet him, and he embraced him. He probably squeezed him like a man squeezes a man and said, "Wow, I didn't miss you, brother. Love you." And then he says, and he fell on his neck and he wept. He did miss him. He did love him. As much as he hated him back 20 years ago for what happened, he still loved him because he was his brother. He still cared about him. It says, and he laid on his neck and he wept and he kissed him. And they both wept together. Can you imagine the ice that melted between those two? And this one's thinking, well, I had to leave because my brother did this, and I had to leave because my brother did, I stayed because my brother did this, and I went out and married these other women because I knew it'd make my dad mad and everything else, and this one went off and did what he was supposed to do. But when they got back together, they said, yeah, we've made a lot of mistakes, we had a lot of water under the bridge, but they hugged each other, they kissed each other, and they wept together. And he lifted up his eyes and he saw the women and the children and he said, who are those with thee? Wow. Man, who are all these women and who are all these children? And who's all this stuff? And he says, who are these with thee? And he said, the children which God hath graciously given thy servant. Again, he says he's a servant. Again, he recognizes that Esau shows respect and lets himself be lowered down to the servant thing, which is where we're supposed to always be. But he says, these are the children that God hath graciously blessed me with. God has loaded his boat. He has 12 children, 11 boys, one girl right now, and they're all healthy, they're all strong, they're all growing. He says, and God, and he recognizes not just that he has these children, this is the children I went out and made or whatever, but these are the children that God gave me. These are the children that not one of them was he considered a mistake, not one of them was an accident, not one of them, well, I got these from this one and this from this one. No, these are all the children that God gave me, God blessed me with. And he did it graciously, which means he did it freely and goodly and abundantly. Then the handmaids came near, they and the children, and they bowed themselves. So they even showed reverence and respect to Esau. So this whole time they're buttering Esau up, they're messing with his heart. They're messing with his heart strings. And the handmaid came near, and they and the children, and they bowed themselves. So both of those came, and then Leah also and her children came and bowed themselves, and after came Joseph near and Rachel, and they bowed themselves. So in order as they were coming, each one bowed down and showed reverence to Esau. Each one showed respect to Esau. Each one was there doing what they're supposed to do. And they each one, even Rachel and Joseph, came near and bowed down. And he said, "What meanest thou by this drove which met me?" In other words, I kept seeing these sheep. And when I talk to your servant, he says, "These are for you. These are a gift. And by the way, thy servant Jacob is coming behind us." And then he saw the goats. And he says, "What's this?" He says, "This is a gift. And by the way, Jacob, thy servant, is coming." And then the cows and the camels, and each one the same way. "And Jacob, thy servant, is coming." Each time he was showing servitude of Jacob towards Esau, even though we know Jacob was the heir. He says, each time he did that, he says, "What meanest all these drove?" And he said, "These are to find grace in the sight of my Lord." Again, reverence. These were all done on purpose to find grace. Now, we know we can't buy grace, but we can for people. We can butter them up a little bit, soften them up a little bit, soften their hearts. So while he had God working on the heart, he was working on the eyes with the gifts. He says, "These were all done that I might find grace with of my Lord." And Esau said, "I have enough. I got plenty. I got all kind of cows and sheep and goats and you name it up there on the mountain." He says, "I have enough, my brother. Keep that thou hast unto thyself." Now, I've often wondered, because right here it's a little tricky in the scripture, did he actually keep it or did he send it on? Because it never really breaks it out to, yeah, he sent some guys ahead with it, because he says, "No, I'm going to follow behind," later on here. He says, "I'm going to follow behind because I don't want to override them. I don't want to overrun them. I don't want to maybe lose some in the desert because we've done them too bad." But the next time he talks to him, he's in Shechem. He didn't go up to where Esau was at. He goes to Shechem. So we sit here. I think it's Shechem, isn't it? Yeah. Anyways. Succoth, I'm sorry. Succoth. He goes up to Succoth. And he says, "But nay, I pray thee, if now I have found grace in thy sight, then receive my present at my hand, for therefore I have seen thy face, as though I had seen the face of God, and thou hast was pleased with me." In other words, he's really buttering him up now, and he says, "Go ahead and take the gift anyways, because I have seen your face as the face of God." I'm sitting here. Are you telling this to Esau? But he's pumping Esau up here, making him feel good. He's got him going on. He says, "I have seen thy face as though," so he doesn't see him as God, but as though, "I have seen the face of God, and thou was pleased with me." In other words, I'm seeing you smiling. I'm seeing you loving me. I'm seeing you kissing me. I'm seeing you hugging me. I'm seeing you accepting my blessing. I'm seeing you taking the animals. I'm seeing you that you are pleased with me. We're no longer at enmity with each other. We're no longer at anger with each other. We're no longer fighting with each other, but now we are okay. Now we know later on Edom goes against Israel before they go into the promised land. But right now at this time, he's got him all pumped up. He's called him Lord. He's called him, I'm your servant. He says, I'm sending you these gifts and I see you. He says, take, I pray thee. Now I remember when Abraham buried Sarah and it went back and forth over by in the funeral cave. He says, it's worth this. But what's that between me and you? And we say, well, maybe he's not going to pay. But he does pay. And I'm thinking right here, even though we can't see him give him these gifts, these five flocks or whatever, he still gives them to him. He still sends them home, because that'd be like an Indian giver if he didn't. He says, I done pumped him up. I don't care what he said. Well, I've got plenty. Well, you got plenty more, because I'm not going to turn around and take it back. I brought you these gifts. I got these gifts lined out for a reason. And now I'm going to make sure you get these gifts. He says, take, I pray thee, my blessing that I brought to thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me. In other words, if God had not given me all that he gave me, I could have never gave you this blessing to begin with. Back where I was at Laban's house, God took all of what Laban thought was going to be never happening. A couple of little ring-shanked cows here and straight cows here and a couple of little spotted ones here. That's all he would have had. But instead, God says, all the calves this week will be ring-straked. All the calves next week will be spotted. All the calves the next month will be brown. So God blessed him by taking away from Laban. He says, take my blessing, because God has been gracious. God has been merciful to me. God has overloaded my boat. And I made a promise to God back there that I would give 10% of everything I ever made. And he says, take, I pray thee, the blessing that I brought thee, because God hath dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. Wait a minute. He actually believes he's got enough. Boy, that'd be a good thing for us to get to, wouldn't it? Some place where we could say, I got enough. I have what I need. Now you got to trust God for that, because you don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. We know how that works. But the thing is, to have a place in your heart where you say, I have enough, is to say, God, you have blessed me, and I got my trust in you, and I got my faith in you, and I don't need anything else but you. It says, I have enough. I'm going to get there one day. And he urged him, and he took it. Oh, I missed that spot right there. He took it. So there I see, there I almost messed up. You got to watch me. And he says, and he urged him, and he took the blessing. He took the five herds of cows. And he said, let us take our journey, and let us go, and I will go before thee. In other words, he says, you go your way and going back to your house, take your time, and I'm going to go this way and take my time. He says, go before thee. And he said unto him, my Lord, again, he's sort of buttering him up, knoweth that the children are tender. So in other words, you and your 400 men can make a lot faster travel than us and these herds can. So he says, you go ahead and go on back to your spot. I'm going to move on along the road. But my children are tender, they're young, the cows are tender, the cows don't need a lot of water, they need some grazing. He says, knoweth that the children are tender, and the flocks and the herds are with me, and if men should override them, one day all the flock will die. In other words, we're going to keep easing along. You and your 400 men can rush on back to the house, go take care of whatever business you need to take care of. We're going to just ease along here. We're going to get your gifts to you. We're going to get your stuff to you. We're going to take care of this. Because if we override these things, we try to hurry them at the pace that a man and 400 men would travel, they're going to starve. They're going to drown. They're going to go without water. They're going to die out in the wilderness there. He says, they would die. Let my Lord, I pray thee, pass over before his servant. In other words, go ahead. Leave me here. And I'll take care of these sheep and things for you. And I will lead on softly. In other words, I'm going to drive them no faster, no harder than I need to get into your house safely. No harder than I got to get to where I'm going safely. And I will lead on softly according, as the cattle that goeth before me, and the children are able to endure until I come unto my Lord and a seer. Now, I don't see him actually getting a seer unless he just drops off the presence at seer and he keeps on going, because after he leaves seer, next time we see him, he's over there at Succoth. So he says, so he undoubtedly drops them off and just eases on down to Succoth, right down there. But he says, I don't want to override them. I don't want to overpush them. He's found grace with Esau. He's found mercy with Esau. He says, look, let me just ease along here, and I'll just bring it to you. I'm your servant. I'll take care of these things. I won't lose none of them. And he says, no faster than they can endure. In other words, he knew just how fast and just how slow he needed to go, that he wouldn't lose one single animal. And Esau said, let me now leave with these some of the folks that are with me. And he said, what needeth it? Let me find grace in the sight of my Lord. In other words, I got this under control, Esau. Don't need to leave no men. And besides that, these sheep know me. These cattle know me. They know my children. They know my servants. And they know the commands. And they know who to follow. And they're only going to follow them. If you leave me a bunch of strange men around, they're going to make all the cows nervous and jittery and upset. They're not going to know what to do. So what needeth thee that you leave these men with me? He said, what needeth? Let me find grace in thy sight of my Lord. And Esau returned that day and on his way unto Seir. But Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built him a house. Hey, he moved out of the tent. He built a house. Built him a house, and he made booths for the cattle. Wherefore the name of the place was called Succoth. In other words, all the cattle had little stalls made and little corrals made, and he made a house. Now, I don't know if it ain't like the tents where you had a house over here for this girl and a house over here for this girl and a house over here for those girls, and maybe one little house over here for himself. I don't know if that's what he did or not, but said he did build a house, because we know when he was in tents, each one had a separate tent or a separate apartment that they lived in. That's a family feuding bunch. He says, Esau returned that day and his way unto Seir, and Jacob journeyed to Succoth and built a house and made booths for the cattle. Therefore the name of the place was called Succoth. And Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Paddan Aram, and pitched his tent before the city. Now that house turned into a tent just that quick. Houses, dwelling place, tent, all the same word. And he built himself a tent there when he came out of Paddan Aram, and he bought a parcel of a field. Now, this is the first time where we see a piece of land being bought for living on. Everybody else just lived over here a while, lived over there a while, moved over here a while. Now he's buying him a parcel of land. He says, and he bought a parcel of land, of a field. Where he had spread his tent at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. Now that story, that means we must be going to do Dinah's story next week. So y'all better read ahead. It says, and he bought this land from Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money, and he erected there an altar. And he called it Elohim Israel. Elohim Israel. And I should have looked that one up, but I didn't. I'll have it for next week. I think it's got something to do with my God or God over Israel, something like that. Elohim Israel. Y'all may have something wrote down already, I don't know. But he built this land. He built this altar on a piece of land that he bought so that it doesn't belong to anybody but Israel. It belongs to himself, belongs to God's people, and he builds this altar there, and he worships there, Elohim Israel. And I'll have your definition for that next week. And then we'll get into the Dinah story next week. And I don't know if y'all know about this Dinah story, but this is where the Levites actually near about lost it. they had to get forget the Levites almost get in big trouble, and so does I think Simeon. Simeon and the Levites both get in trouble in this next chapter. And only because of somebody doing some kind of blessing did they get to be in the priesthood. Because right here they went out and murdered a bunch of folks and caused a whole bunch of trouble for Jacob. And we're going to study that next week. Yeah, next week. Altar of God. Elohim. No. Elaha Israel. Altar of God. That's what it means. So next week, y'all study up, because we're going to get to see about Dinah, his only daughter. Brother Lucian, would you pray for us, please?